Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Welcome to the Morning Rumble on Freedom 106.5 FM. You've been hearing about it all week long. And we do have with us in studio this morning His Excellency, Permanent Representative of Ukraine to the UN, Ambassador of Ukraine to Trinidad and Tobago non-resident. And that, of course, is His Excellency Serhiy Kislytsia. I hope that I got it correct.
Well, absolutely. I'm happy. I mean, it shows how close our nations are if you can almost perfectly pronounce my name.
Yes, definitely. I've been practicing it because I wanted to make sure that I got it right. We're not too familiar, and that might be an unfortunate thing, with much of what is happening in Ukraine prior to these major developments. And as a people, as a world, actually, we're learning as we go along. It's our pleasure to have you in studio with us here this morning. And I know that the discussion, our listeners are keenly interested in some of what is going to take place. You're non-resident, that's what it says here, but you are the ambassador of Ukraine to this country. Tell us about your visit here.
Well, first of all, I would like to avail of this opportunity to wish every citizen of this country a very happy Independence Day. I mean, you celebrate your jubilee in peace and relative prosperity. And I admire how this nation is steered progressively in spite of many dramatic developments around the world. So my primary reason to be here is to celebrate your holiday with you. And I'm happy that every member of Diplomatic Corps had a unique chance to be received by the President last night to enjoy very beautiful calypso music and to see amazing fireworks.
It's definitely our pleasure to have you here. Albeit we know that there are some very trying times back at home. Ukraine celebrated and observed their independence just a week ago. And I think that a year ago, when observances were held in Ukraine for independence, nobody in their wildest dreams could have imagined what would be the situation 1 year on. We hear a lot about it in the news, we read, we see, but not very often do we get to speak to persons who are intricately involved in what's going on and finding out what's happening there. We've heard the reports, the news stories. They paint just a tip of the iceberg as to what's going on. Let's find out what's going on. Let's start at the beginning. The decision by Russia to invade came as a surprise to many. But was it really that surprising, or were there events that led up to this invasion?
Indeed, that's a very good question, and it is my duty to inform the public, including the citizens of this country. But I would like to begin with saying that the war didn't start on the night of 23rd, 24th of February. In fact, the war began more than 8 years ago when the Russian Federation moved in Ukraine and tried to illegally annex a peninsula, which is a part of Ukraine, the peninsula of Crimea. And ever since, the Russians are occupying temporarily that peninsula, and also they are present in the eastern part of Ukraine. So we were fighting for more than 8 years. What happened on the night of the 23rd, 24th was the new stage of the war, and that was the full-scale invasion. Was it imminent? Yes, I believe it was imminent because it was the core plan of the Russian President Putin, who cannot tolerate the existence of the independent Ukraine. For him, this war is not about grabbing a piece or a part of Ukrainian territory. For him, it is to destroy the very notion of independence of Ukraine. And indeed, we celebrated a week ago on August 24th, the independence. But that day was not only about independence. It was exactly 6 months since the invasion, large-scale invasion, started. And I'm sure that it's not by chance that Putin decided to start the invasion on that day, because for him it is full of symbolism. He wanted to destroy us by the day of the independence, and we are still there and we will be there forever.
I think one of the things for persons looking on from the outside, the resilience of Ukraine in this situation has been remarkable. When you speak of the players, it's interesting how Ukraine has been able to hold off and defend on its own. We've had the speakers from international lending assistance in their very own ways, but the Ukraine citizenry, the administration, they've done a very good job, commendable to say the least, and it speaks a lot to the resilience of the Ukraine people.
Well, thank you very much for this appreciation of the resilience of the Ukrainians. Indeed, I need to tell you that in spite of the fact that Ukraine is the largest European nation, I mean, some say that France is the largest, but they are the largest if they include their overseas territories. I mean, and Ukraine has a population of about 40 million, so it is not a very simple thing just to move in and invade Ukraine by definition. But of course, there are many governments who never expected that Ukrainians would resist at this level and would defend their country in a such a dedicated way. In fact, that was a failure of Putin to misjudge the strengths of the Ukrainian nation. But not only of Putin, there are many intelligence services around the world who never ever cared to have a planning beyond a week of invasion, because they all believed that we would not resist for so long. But then, in the course of a week, they realized that it was a major failure, and the level of the unity of support of a collective democratic world is unprecedented. We can only compare that with the times of the Second World War, mm-hmm. when the United Nations, and I need to say that the name United Nations existed long before the organization was established. The United Nations were fighting Nazism during the Second World War. So we do very much appreciate the position, the principled position of so many countries, including Trinidad and Tobago, when it comes to the violations of the fundamentals of international law and order.
What has the sentiment of the government of Trinidad and Tobago been to Ukraine?
I think that we have to look, for example, at what happened on the 2nd of March in the hall of the General Assembly, when 141 countries, including Trinidad and Tobago, voted in favor of a draft resolution that condemned the aggression by the Russian Federation. That was a condemnation not only of the assault on Ukraine, that was a very clear condemnation of an assault on the freedom and liberty around the world, of that brutal violation of the UN Charter. Because finally the world realized that even if the conflict is so far away from many parts of the world, it hits the very heart of the design of peace and stability in the world as we have it after the Second World War. So I'm very much grateful. And I think that the optics of what happened in Ukraine has changed dramatically, and many people realized that if the UN Charter has no value, then they have nothing that can help them withstand that kind of aggression. Because let's be realistic. There are about 160 countries around the world that would never have armies or economies that would allow them to protect themselves meaningfully for a prolonged period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So they need something. If they are not members of collective defense systems or alliances, then they need something beyond that that at least in theory guarantees them peaceful development.
I've said on the program before that I find it very interesting the way the world is reacting and the response of the international community to what's taking place between Russia and Ukraine. The Russian president early on in the game said, you could be considered a threat and issued an ultimatum that anyone getting involved, there'd be a dear price to pay. And since that, what you've seen is you've seen assistance being given to the cause, but not direct intervention. And there are some who question, why not? Why would there not be a more concerted effort to try to stamp this thing out and resolve it one way diplomatically or the other and end the bloodshed? Let's deal with that. Is Ukraine satisfied with the international response to its calls for help?
Well, look, first of all, it should be remembered that it was the government of Ukraine and the president of Ukraine who repeatedly, almost every second day before the invasion, were sending messages publicly and through diplomatic channels to Putin, to Lavrov, to others in Russia, that we were calling on them to sit down and discuss the issues. Neither Lavrov wanted to meet my Minister Kuleba, nor Putin wanted to meet President Zelensky. The Russian ambassador in New York was avoiding me. He was telling Secretary General Guterres of the United Nations that he should not intervene. So the Russians were doing their best to, while preparing for the invasion, because of course you understand that scale of invasion requires a long, many months, if not years, of preparation. They were trying to disguise their intention under the notion, though, oh no, it will never happen, we will never invade, we will never attack. And you can go and you can easily Google all those statements by the Russian leadership and by the Russian diplomats, including in New York. So it is fundamentally untrue. I'm not saying that you say that, but if someone says that Ukrainians were trying to avoid a peaceful way to negotiate the situation, and then the Russian Federation using the veto power in the Security Council, they basically blocked any meaningful attempt by the Security Council to act under Chapter 6 of the UN Charter, which is about peaceful prevention of conflicts. So it was totally impossible to activate the Security Council because of the blocking position of the Russian Federation. And we ended where we ended. The Russians attacked us, you know. And now, if you say, why don't you sit down and why don't you negotiate? I mean, at the early stages of this invasion, we even had a couple of meetings. And all the Russian side was saying to us, even on paper, they were saying, capitulate. They are putting in front of you a piece of paper that was basically the conditions of capitulation. I mean, nobody will do that. It is totally suicidal and against the wish and will of the Ukrainian nation.
It's been 6 months. And I'm sure that on the ground, the situation there is not ideal. What's going on with the Ukraine citizen at this point in time? An invasion that has gone from overnight into 6 months is a long period of time. What is life like for Ukrainians at this point in time?
Right. The initial plan of the Russians, as you rightly mentioned, was to invade Ukraine in like a couple of days. They even didn't even care to have supply traveling along with the army. So what they had in their trunks was the parade uniforms, and they hoped to have a parade in downtown capital of Ukraine, and they failed. So we all lived until this invasion being told that the Russian army is number two in the world and that the Ukrainian army is nothing. So it has been proven that it is totally wrong. So nevertheless, about 20% of Ukrainian territory is occupied, and many cities of Ukraine, including the cities that are not directly occupied but being hit by missiles every night, they are razed to the ground. There are cities like Mariupol that simply do not exist anymore. That's in the southeast of Ukraine. And to give you an idea about the scale of a tragedy, I would bring you back once again to the years of World War II when Mariupol was occupied. Then, during the World War II, 20,000 citizens were killed. By the end of this spring, 30,000 of the Ukrainian citizens who lived in Mariupol were killed. 30,000, and the entire city, unlike during the World War II, is razed to the ground. You know, so you imagine 21st century and the magnitude of the tragedy. He says, I mean, Russian President Putin says, I come to liberate Ukrainians and Russian-speaking Ukrainians. What he does, as a matter of fact, he kills them. He kills them in thousands. He speaks about so-called Russian world. And it is true that there was a part of Ukrainian population that would have their first language as Russian while being Ukrainians, you know. But the majority of those killed are people who speak the Russian language.
How much longer can Ukraine continue to resist?
Well, Ukraine will exist forever. You shouldn't have any doubts, you know. And the world has seen many tragedies, but the Ukrainians have been fighting for their freedom and independence for centuries. You know, we were free as a nation until 17th century, and then we were occupied, colonized by Moscow. But we will fight. I mean, I need to tell you that I'll give you a couple of figures. According to the recent poll, 93% of Ukrainians support the government, the army, and the president. And 85% of Ukrainians says that there is no way that territorial concessions should be part of any deal. Mm-hmm. So with that kind of attitude of the nation that had been tormented and tortured by the Russians for 6 months, it is politically suicidal to any national leader to sit down with the Russians and to negotiate any territorial concessions. I mean, Ukraine is a democracy. Any leader who would dare to do that will be removed from the office instantaneously. Let me remind you that Putin is in his seat in Moscow for more than 20 years. During his leadership of Russia, we already have had 5 presidents. None of them were perfect, but Ukrainians are accustomed to a democratic rule. So the leadership of President Zelensky is based on the will of the nation, and the will of the nation is to deoccupy our territories and to ensure that Ukraine will not be colonized again by the Russian Empire, and that Ukraine will exist as an independent nation.
There are some people who find this entire scenario unbelievable, that in this modern day society we can have this taking place, the loss of lives, the attacks, the destruction, and there are many who are asking for more to be done. Some analysts have put forward that this could be a sustained initiative, and some are saying they have no idea how long it's going to go. There's a story on the BBC that says that in East Ukraine braces to launch a counterattack, and they're trying to see if they can have a counter-offensive ready to regain some territory before winter sets in. What does a prolonged conflict between Russia and Ukraine mean for the rest of the world? Because we've seen the impact already, that the initial assault and the invasion, the upheavals that were resulting in trade when it comes to wheat, for instance, and to other commodities, oil and gas and everything else. What does a prolonged conflict mean for the rest of the world? Can we afford it?
No, the world cannot afford it, and for many reasons. Because, first of all, you cannot continue to exist as a democratic world if you allow such a treacherous assault on the very fundamentals of your existence. The nature of today's world require collective action. Because the challenges all of us face, be it security challenges, be it food challenges, be it climate change, cannot be resolved by a single nation or by a group of nations. I mean, look, CARICOM nations, right? Even united, they cannot take a meaningful effort to stop the consequences of the climate change. The global action is required. Can you ensure that the world of today, that is so much hit by this war and that needs to divert so much efforts, be it human resources, be it financial resources, can concentrate on addressing other major issues while the issue of the Russian aggression is not resolved? No, it's impossible. It is impossible for many reasons. It is impossible. Let's look at the issue of food security. Ukraine is one of the major exporters of food abroad. I will give you one example. The share of Ukraine on the world market when it comes to sunflower oil, 55%.
Mm.
There are countries around the world that depend on Ukrainian grain 50 to 70%. And those are the countries of different economic potential. Look, there is Israel that buys 50% of grain from Ukraine, and it's a rich country. There is Lebanon next to Israel that depends on Ukrainian grain 70%. And Lebanon cannot afford the interruption of food supply from Ukraine, because you can't really go to another supermarket where the prices are double and buy to replace the Ukrainian grain. So we were not able to export grain during the war until very recently, when the arrangement was signed in Istanbul, facilitated by Secretary General Guterres. And normally, before the war, we would export more than 5 million metric tons of grain from Ukraine monthly. So now, after the agreement is signed and enforced, we reach the point when we export about 1.5 million tons. So it's not even our capacity. We are able to export at the beginning of the war, of the aggression, there were about 20 million tons of grain sitting in the Ukrainian ports, ready to be exported to the most affected countries. I mean, this week we send grain to Ethiopia, for example. Energy crisis. The prices for energy skyrocketed in Europe and in North America. If Europeans were paying 200, 300 euros for gas before the invasion, now they're paying 2,500. Does it affect only Europeans? Will countries here in this part of the world be safe? No, because if in this globalized world everyone is so dependent on so many high-tech things and food that you need to import, the prices will go up in Europe. And if Europeans can survive, although they may be unhappy that there is a spike of the prices, will the rest of the world be so safe? So it has a cumulative effect, a multiplying effect around the world. And if so much resources are diverted, if the Europeans and other countries have to resort to something that they already believed was the past, like coal, oil, for the production of energy, which impacts the climate change, right? What will be the effect on your country?
Well, we've had already
right.
The effects. We see them when it comes to food prices. I've spoken to key players in the supermarket industry, in the energy industry, and they've said to us in no uncertain terms that we are as affected as anyone else. And in this globalized economy, you can't get away from that. I had asked the question about resolving this, and you had spoken about, you suggested collective action.
Right.
What does collective action mean? Is it diplomacy? Is it military? What are we looking at?
It should be a combination. I mean, the diplomatic action, we see a very strong diplomatic action not only on at bilateral level, but also multilateral levels. I mean, the General Assembly of the United Nations is playing a super important role amid the total inability of the Security Council to act because of the veto right of the Russian Federation. The General Assembly is very prominent, and the General Assembly is a setting where every single nation has the same vote. And when some people I meet here, including regular citizens, they say, oh, we're such a small nation, I say, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the General Assembly of the United Nations, you guys have the same vote as Canada or Australia or the United States. Because every single country has the right to express itself. And therefore, the fact that we have an overwhelming support of the principles of the UN Charter when an issue of the Russian aggression is put to a vote, it's very important. So the diplomatic action is there and the unity is present. So Russia is isolated no matter what they say. Look what happened on the Day of Independence of Ukraine on the 24th of August when President Zelensky expressed his wish to address the Security Council. It consists of 15 members. The Russian ambassador said, no, we would not allow that to happen. So then the Chinese chair of the Security Council said, okay, let's have a vote. Who voted with Russia? Nobody. It was just the hand of the Russian ambassador up in the air against my president addressing the Security Council. 13 countries voted in favor. And Russia and China, as the chair of the Security Council, abstained. You know, so no matter what Putin says, they are truly isolated. Because if they believe that North Korea or Syria is their support base, that's pitiful. And I'm saying that with a deep, profound understanding that Russia has had everything at the beginning of the 90s to be a rich and progressive country. And they really missed that chance. And now Putin destroys so many things that could have happened Russia develop along the line of progressive economic and social development.
We need to take a couple quick messages. And for those of you, I see the phone lines ringing off the hook. When we get back after these quick messages, we'll continue our discussion with His Excellency Ambassador Sergei Kislytsia, Ambassador of Ukraine to Trinidad and Tobago, non-resident. We'll take a couple quick calls as we encourage you to be a part of the discussion right here on the Morning Rumble on Freedom 106.5 FM. Stay with us.
Join the chat now on the all-new Freedom on the all-new Talk Radio 106.5.
Welcome back. Our special guest in studio, Ambassador of Ukraine to Trinidad and Tobago non-resident. Let's take a couple quick, I emphasize on quick, a couple quick calls as we come very close to the end of our interview, just about 10 minutes again. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to Your Excellency. Excellency, welcome to Trinidad and Tobago. Question I wanted to ask you was this. This war started more than 8 years ago. And for me, one of the most consequential and harrowing things of the war was the shooting down of the Malaysian Airlines with more than 200 persons on board. It seems to be going on, and it seems to be virtually no end. Now, it would appear to me that both China and India may have some influence with Russia. The question is, can you really and truly develop some type of rapport where we can bring some kind of sense within this battle, which really and truly makes no sense? Because my understanding from Mr. Putin is that he wants the Ukraine, because the Ukraine, he does not want a bordering country that is aligned to NATO on his border. But if Ukraine is obliterated, then I see other countries like Romania, Moldavia, I see a couple other countries which are going to be the border to Russia. So it really does not make much sense to me, looking on from where I am.
Okay.
I want to find out how much emphasis is really and truly placed on finding persons who can actually have a talk with Mr. Putin to change his ways, because we certainly don't want to reach a situation whereby we find ourselves...
All right, you're taking a little bit too long to get to the question. The question speaks to diplomacy, international diplomacy, and getting people who may have that influence involved. We spoke about that a bit, the collective action. Is that an option?
We will pursue both bilateral diplomacy and multilateral diplomacy. And when it comes to China and India, let me remind to all of the listeners that China is a permanent member of the Security Council, and India is a member, elected member currently, of the Security Council. So they both have a particular role to play, even if the Security Council is blocked by the Russian position. There is no other way that than to sit down at one point and to negotiate, but only when Putin agrees that the independence of Ukraine is not threatened, that the borders of Ukraine are those of 1991 as recognized by the international community. And I'm sure that both China and India, because they were mentioned among others in the comment, will have a chance to play a very important role.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, blessing to the panel. And much blessing to you, Mr. Ambassador. We all have goes out to the people who Ukraine and the government. My question is quickly is, why the mighty America let down Ukraine in this time of need? I really thought mighty America would assist with military equipment and personnel to fight that bastard called Putin.
Right. It is important to acknowledge that Ukraine receives assistance, both humanitarian and military assistance, from dozens of countries, where certain countries like the United Kingdom, Poland, Baltic countries, the United States, they have the most prominent role, not only because of their economic or military potential, but because of their sense of responsibility and the overwhelming support of their nations. Every drop of assistance matters, and I'm sure that the fact that there is such a unity of almost every CARICOM country in New York, and I it is palpable. I mean, I see it every day, helps us a lot.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning to you and the ambassador. Ambassador, about 8 years ago, Crimea and the other areas around were taken over by Russia, but there was no action taken by Ukraine at the time until recently when Russia invaded. Are you planning now from Ukraine side, when you finish the war, that that area will be taken back by Ukraine and reclaimed totally, all the areas that were taken by Russia earlier? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Indeed, I mean, all territories of Ukraine will be retaken, deoccupied by Ukraine. One of the reasons we were not able to resist the invasion of Russia into Crimea in 2014, because the Ukrainian army was almost non-existent due to the very pro-Russian government that we had before 2014. So it took us about 8 years to build and reform the army. And now Ukrainian army has proven by its actions in the battlefield its strength. So I'm sure that we will retake the territories.
We have just a couple of minutes again in the interview. We've dealt quickly with a lot of very, very serious issues on what's going on in the ground, the length of the invasion, the impact worldwide at home in Ukraine and everything else. And I know that you're here, and you're here just, well, you're here for the independence celebrations. And I'd like to end on a note, getting your impression of being here and being a part of our celebrations and what you were able to see and the impression it left on you.
Well, I need to say that, I mean, I think most of you can appreciate how busy my schedule in New York is. But I can assure you that every time I take a flight by the Caribbean Airlines from New York to Port of Spain, I'm very happy, because I come to a country which I learn to like. I cannot say that I know this country very well. Every visit to this country offers me many opportunities. I was very much impressed yesterday. First of all, the peaceful nature of celebration, the dedication of the people. Even look, I mean, the fireworks, you know. You know the massive fireworks in New York on July the 4th.
Mm.
No prejudice to my American friends. But the fireworks yesterday were beautiful. And I need to compliment the person who was behind the design, because the design was exceptional. And I think that whoever was in charge of this celebration invested so much love in these festivities. And I'm sure that the Trinidadians and Tobaganians are very proud of their country.
Ambassador, well, I'm happy that while you were here, you were able to engage in some of the activities for our 60th anniversary. And I'm sure that you'll be back again. And hopefully when you get back, we can have another discussion, a more in-depth discussion, an update as to what might be the case at that point in time when next you visit. I do know that your schedule could be only described as crazy. The number of diplomatic meetings and so on that you'll be engaged in, for the obvious reason. But I thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to be with us this morning, to speak to our listeners and to give them the perspective that probably needed to be heard of what's taking place and some of the things that they should consider important in all of these events that, even though we're so far away, physically impact on us one way or the other. So, Ambassador, thank you once more for being with us here this morning. It was definitely our pleasure having you in studio here. And we wish you all the best on your trip and a safe trip back to the U.S.
Well, thank you very much indeed. And I would like to once again to congratulate your people on this jubilee, and stay peaceful and prosperous. Enjoy a happy life. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, a special interview, as we've been telling you about all morning long, with His Excellency, Permanent Representative of Ukraine to the UN, Ambassador of Ukraine to Trinidad and Tobago, non-resident Sergei Kislytsia. And this is probably where we drop the curtains on this edition of the Morning Rumble. Govan is up next. As we always say, be safe on the nation's roads. You never can tell. The life you save may be just that of your own.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.